Washington, D.C., the CBS Department of Public Affairs presents this special broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My fellow citizens, at noon today, I sent a message to the Congress about the situation in Korea. I want to talk to you tonight about that situation and about what it means to the security of the United States and to our hopes for peace in the world. Korea is a small country, thousands of miles away. But if what is happening there is important to every American. On Sunday, June 25th, communist forces attacked the Republic of Korea. This attack has made it clear beyond all doubt that the international communist movement is willing to use armed invasion to conquer independent nations. An act of aggression such as this creates a very real danger to the security of all free nations. The attack upon Korea was an outright breach of the peace and a violation of the Charter of the United Nations. By their actions in Korea, communist leaders have demonstrated their contempt for the basic moral principles on which the United Nations is founded. This is a direct challenge to the efforts of free nations to build the kind of world in which men can live in freedom and peace. This challenge has been presented squarely. We must meet it squarely. It is important for all of us to understand the essential facts as to how the situation in Korea came about. Before and during World War II, Korea was subject to Japanese rule. When the fighting stopped, it was agreed that troops of the Soviet Union would accept the surrender of the Japanese soldiers in the northern part of Korea, and that American forces would accept the surrender of the Japanese in the southern part. For this purpose, the 38th parallel was used as the dividing line. Later, the United Nations sought to establish Korea as a free and independent nation. A commission was sent out to supervise a free election in the whole of Korea. However, this election was held only in the southern part of the country because the Soviet Union refused to permit an election for this purpose to be held in the northern part. Indeed, Soviet authorities even refused to permit the United Nations Commission to visit Northern Korea. Nevertheless, the United Nations decided to go ahead where it could. In August 1948, the Republic of Korea was established as a free and independent nation in that part of Korea south of the 38th parallel. In December 1948, the Soviet Union stated that it had withdrawn its troops from Northern Korea and that a local government had been established there. However, the communist authorities never have permitted the United Nations observers to visit Northern Korea to see what is going on behind that part of the Iron Curtain. It is from that area where the communist authorities have been unwilling to let the outside world see what was going on that the attack was launched against the Republic of Korea on June 25th. That attack came without provocation and without warning. It was an act of raw aggression, without a shadow of justification. I repeat that it was an act of raw aggression. It had no justification whatever. The communist invasion was launched in great force with planes, tanks, and artillery. The size of the attack and the speed with which it was followed up make it perfectly plain that it had been plotted long in advance. As soon as word of the attack was received, Secretary of State Acheson called me at Independence, Missouri, and informed me that, with my approval, he would ask for an immediate meeting of the United Nations Security Council. The Security Council met just 24 hours after the communist invasion began. One of the main reasons the Security Council was set up was to act in such cases as this, to stop outbreaks of aggression in a hurry before they develop into general conflicts. In this case, the Council passed a resolution which called for the invaders of Korea to stop fighting and withdraw. The Council called on all members of the United Nations to help carry out this resolution. The communist invaders had ignored the action of the Security Council and kept right on with their attack. The Security Council then met again. It recommended that the members of the United Nations help the Republic of Korea repel the attack and help restore peace and security in that area. 52 of the 59 countries which are members of the United Nations have given their support to the action taken by the Security Council to restore peace in Korea. These actions by the United Nations and its members are of great importance. The free nations have now made it clear that lawless aggression will be met with force. The free nations have learned the fateful lesson of the 1930s. That lesson is that aggression must be met firmly. Appeasement leads only to further aggression and ultimate war. The principal effort to help the Koreans preserve their independence and to help the United Nations restore peace has been made by the United States. We have sent land, sea, and air forces to assist in these operations. We have done this because we know that what is at stake here is nothing less than our own national security and the peace of the world. So far, two other nations, Australia and Great Britain, have sent planes to Korea. And six other nations, Australia, Canada, France, Great Britain, the Netherlands, and New Zealand, have made naval forces available. Under the flag of the United Nations, a unified command has been established for all forces of the members of the United Nations fighting in Korea. General Douglas MacArthur is the commander of this combined force. The prompt action of the United Nations to put down lawless aggression and the prompt response to this action by free peoples all over the world will stand as a landmark in mankind's long search for a rule of law among nations. Only a few countries have failed to endorse the efforts of the United Nations to stop the fighting in Korea. The most important of these is the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union has boycotted the meetings of the United Nations Security Council. It has refused to support the actions of the United Nations with respect to Korea. The United States requested the Soviet government 2 days after the fighting started to use its influence with the North Koreans to have them withdraw. The Soviet government refused. The Soviet government has said many times that it wants peace in the world, but its attitude toward this act of aggression against the Republic of Korea is in direct contradiction of its statement. For our part, we shall continue to support the United Nations action to restore peace in the world. We know that it will take a hard, tough fight to halt the invasion, to drive the communists back. The invaders have been provided with enough equipment and supplies for a long campaign. They overwhelmed the lightly armed defense forces of the Korean Republic in the first days and drove southward. Now, however, the Korean defenders have been reorganized and are making a brave fight for their liberty. And an increasing number of American troops have joined them. Our forces have fought a skillful rear guard delaying action, pending the arrival of reinforcements. Some of these reinforcements are now arriving. Others are on the way from the United States. I should like to read you a part of a report I have received from General Collins, Chief of Staff of the United States Army. General Collins and General Vandenberg, Chief of Staff of the Air Force, have just returned from an inspection trip to Korea and Japan. This is what General Collins had to say. The United States Armed Forces in Korea are giving a splendid account of themselves. our Far Eastern forces were organized and equipped primarily to perform peaceful occupation duties in Japan. However, under General MacArthur's magnificent leadership, they have quickly adapted themselves to meet the deliberately planned attack of the North Korean Communist forces, which are well-equipped, well-led, and battle-trained, and which have at times outnumbered our troops by as much as 20-1. Our Army troops, ably supported by tactical aircraft of the United States Air Force and Navy and our Australian friends, flying under the most adverse conditions of weather, have already distinguished themselves in the most difficult of military operations, a delaying action. The fact that they are preventing the communists from overrunning Korea, which this calculated attack had been designed to accomplish, is a splendid tribute to the ability of our armed forces to convert quickly from the peaceful duties of occupation to the grim duties of war. The task that confronts us is not an easy one, but I am confident of the outcome. I shall also read to you a part of a report that I have received from General MacArthur within the last few hours. General MacArthur says, "It is, of course, impossible to predict with any degree of accuracy the future incidents of a military campaign. Over a broad front involving continuous local struggles, there are bound to be ups and downs, losses as well as successes. But the issue of battle is now fully joined and will proceed along lines of action in which we will not be without choice. Our hold upon the southern part of Korea represents a secure base. Our casualties, despite overwhelming odds, have been relatively light. Our strength will continually increase, while that of the enemy will relatively decrease. His supply line is insecure. He has had his great chance and failed to exploit it. We are now in Korea in force, and with God's help, we are there to stay until the constitutional authority of the Republic of Korea is fully restored." These and other reports I have received show that our armed forces are acting with close teamwork and efficiency to meet the problems facing us in Korea. These reports are reassuring, but they also show that the job ahead of us in Korea is long and difficult. Furthermore, the fact that communist forces have invaded Korea is a warning that there may be similar acts of aggression in other parts of the world. Free nations must be on their guard more than ever before against this kind of a sneak attack. It is obvious that we must increase our military strength and preparedness immediately. There are three things we need to do. First, we need to send more men, equipment, and supplies to General MacArthur. Second, in view of the world situation, we need to build up our own army, navy, and air force over and above what is needed in Korea. Third, we need to speed up our work with other countries in strengthening our common defenses.